Bibles, if you would, to the book of Genesis, chapter 26. Genesis chapter 26, verse number 18. And Isaac dug again the wells of water, which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father. For the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. What an awesome statement about this son called Isaac. I told a story last week of how my cousin and I discovered some old wells and some cisterns that had been built back close to the turn of the century. And we found them on an island down in Lossman's River in the 10,000 Islands. But the water was not drinkable because of the years of decay and the intrusion of the salt water. But then I told of the sweet, sweet water that my dad and I had uncovered in South Georgia. Because it had always been kept pristine and uncovered. Isaac dug again the wells that his father had dug. He called them by the same name. Isaac was never a famous individual. His name was famous because of his father. But Isaac never became that famous individual. He was sandwiched in between two great men, Abraham and his son Jacob. He came between two of the greatest individuals that Israel had known. But he didn't fade into oblivion because of his father and his son and the things that he had done. But there was nothing striking and dramatic or thrilling about his life or in his life. But Isaac carried on the traditions of that firm faith in God that he had been taught. That which was necessary to be that link in the chain that kept the chain from being broken. That God's divine purpose and the destiny of Israel might be carried on and carried to fruition. I remember years and years ago when we were in our first pastorate in a little church of obscurity. And we took that little church. It was 8 years old and had eight members. And neither one of us really wanted to go to South Georgia. I had told my my Lord, I will do anything you want me to do. I'll go anywhere you want me to go. I'll go to Africa. I'll go to India. As a matter of fact, we really felt like that's where we were destined to go. Of course, I was thinking India. She was thinking Africa. And we ended up in South Georgia, pretty close to either, both of them combined. But there was a little television ministry that had been started there close to the time that we went there. And by a set of circumstances, I went on television for an hour live, and it never cost our little church anything. It was all free. And there was probably the second time I was there, there was a group of us that on our way out of the building when the lights were being turned off, there was a gentleman that I really was not familiar with, but he had been an evangelist. He was a pastor. And he turned around and he says, "I'm supposed to pray for you." And I said, "Well, by all means, pray for me." He said, "Get down on your knees." I said, "Well, that's a little odd, but sure, I'll be happy to do that." And there on the sidewalk out in front of the television studio, there was five men laid hands on me. And these were the words that gentleman, he prayed a small prayer, and then he said these things over me. He said, "You will preach to millions, or millions will hear my word because of you." That's the way it was put. "But you will be obscure." I never put all of that together quite like I have now. I have an understanding of it. Those words could have also been spoken over Isaac. Millions has heard God's word because of him. But he is kind of obscure. Never famous on his own. I understand that. You and I have a debt that we owe to Isaac because he was that chain in that link in the chain of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that propelled Israel forward. We have a debt of gratitude that we owe not only to him, but to all of those who came before us, who paid the price and paved the way. Those that originally dug the well and those who have redug the well. And that's point number one. We owe that debt of gratitude. And it is our debt. So we give what is due to those who labored so that you and I can be blessed. John chapter 4, verse 38 says, "I send you to reap where you have not what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits of their labor." So we sit here in this beautiful auditorium. We sit here in this atmosphere of worship and praise in comfort because of those who paid the price and did the hard work when things were so difficult. At times when it was like the old folks used to say, it's like pulling hen's teeth. I didn't even know hens had teeth. Now, I guess that makes it a lot harder because they don't have them. So in our comfort and in our blessing, we have that debt of gratitude for those who came before us. The few things that we enjoy depend on basically what, not what we have discovered, but what others have given and the greatness of their lives with God. To build for the future, to dig wells for those generations that are to come, are a sign and a mark of greatness. There's no greater investment than you could give than in the future of Christianity. The more that we as a church pour into these young lives, those that are across the street in children's ministry, those that are downstairs in First Kids, those that are down the hallway in the nursery, the more that you and I pour into their lives, the greater our investment and the greater in God's eyes that we will become. So we need to be planting prayer into their lives. Oh, don't worry about it. If it breaks, we ain't lost too much. The thing is a thorn in my flesh, but I'm learning to use it. Why? I don't know. But somebody named Sean said I needed it. So I try my best at times. But the more that we can pour into those young lives, the greater will be our blessing in the long run, and the greater blessing to Christianity and to the Lord. We look back at the founding of this nation, and we covered this last week. They did not build a nation for themselves. They built a nation for us. And it's like Eisenhower said, or let's go further back than that. It's like what Washington said. He said, we've given you a great country if you can hold on to it. We've given you a great nation if you can cherish it. And Eisenhower said much the same thing. He said, we have a great nation before us, but what will we do with it? Can we hold on to it? Those old wells that had been covered up, those wells that Isaac dug, Abraham had given them. We had lost it. But now Isaac was redigging those wells for the future, for those who were going to come behind him. So think about those, and this is point two, those old wells redug. The wells that Abraham had dug had been redug by Isaac before he and his people, his flocks and his herds, could make use of them. They needed to be uncovered. They needed to be cleaned out. The Philistines had maliciously filled the wells with sand and rocks and rubbish. This world in which we live, and Philistines are a type of the flesh. So this fleshly world in which we live, they want to cover up that refreshing place, that place of nourishment that Christians have enjoyed, that those who came before us have given to us. We need to redig those wells of salvation, those wells of blessing that had been placed in our care now. What are we going to do with them? We've uncovered just parts of it, a little of it. The flesh, the Philistines, the world have filled them up with rocks and rubbish and sand so that they can't be used anymore and they're not good for anything anymore. Isaac did not attempt to dig new wells. He knew that he could never improve on what his father had done. Those things, those wells that had been left to him, he could never improve on the locations that these wells had strategically been placed. God, in his wisdom, poured into men, women that had gone before you and I. And now things have been established. Those things have been dug deep. The dirt had been taken out. The rocks had been broken up. And wells had been dug and fortified of Christianity. This nation was birthed on those Christian principles that God was pouring into men, to women of old. And they dug deep those wells and they established the United States. They established other countries. One by one, we've watched in history as, like, the British Empire that was formed and founded on Christian principles. The Queen of England, back during their heyday, said, "My greatest desire is to see Jesus come back so that I can lay the crown of the British Empire at his feet, because he is the Lord of the British Empire." Now the British Empire has all but faded from any prominence on the world scene. Yes, England is still a valuable country, but it's not the power that it once was. I'm beginning to see the influence and the power of the United States fade. I believe that God put us on the scene, founded on the principles that we were founded upon, which was old wells of England that was being redug here in America. And I believe that God has planted us in this place strategically so that we can be an influence to the world of his name, his power, and his glory. But you and I have allowed our wells to be filled up by the things of the world again. We need to uncover those wells. We need to redig those wells. We cannot improve on what God has already done. We cannot improve on the location and the selection that God has already made. We need to redig as Isaac did the wells that had been placed there by his father Abraham. We need to clear out the rocks and the rubbish and the sand. And we need to do as Isaac did and put new coping around the edges of their wells. We need to repair the old cranks. There's a lot of old cranks that need to be repaired, just in case you're wondering. It may be you. I don't know. But Isaac did these things, but it was on the well of his father. There was new ropes that needed to be placed on those old wells so that when they were pulling the water up to nourish the flocks or themselves, the ropes wouldn't break and the bag or the bucket fall back down. It was hard work. How many of you realize and understand that it's harder to redo something than do it in the first place? When you have to repair a house or rebuild a church, you know, it's harder to raise the dead than it is to have a baby. So sometimes it's easier to start a new church than to raise up an old one. But all over South Carolina, all over the Southeast, emphasis is starting to be put into those dwindling churches, those churches that were once great, but now they've been allowed, from circumstance beyond our control, they've kind of dwindled down. So young men are going into those churches and they're being revitalized and they're rising up again and they're coming to life again. They're shaking off the old hindrances and beginning to reach out into the communities, and the communities are starting to take notice. And great things are going on because old wells are being redug. And we're seeing it right here in our community. We're seeing God do some tremendous things. But it's not easy work. It's hard because the enemy wants to pack the old wells with all kind of rubbish that have to be cleaned out. The walls have to be redone, and all the parts of it have to be replaced. Isaac dug again, and he called their names by the names that his father had called. It's folly to think that the only good thing in the world is something that's happened before we were born. I understand that. I don't want to go back to the horse and buggy days. I didn't live then, but our first church, that little church that I was referencing a while ago, when Susan and I went there, there was no indoor plumbing. We were in the city limits, but we had an outhouse. And you had to trot out the back of the church, down the little path, and there was an outhouse there, and it was used regularly. I don't want to go back to those days. I don't want to have to go out here and dig a hole. I kind of like some modern things. There was no air conditioning in South Georgia during the summer. It's not easy. But we did it. And we saw so many things that God poured in. We had no rooms. My office was a closet. And whenever I closed up my office, I did so by putting my chair on top of my desk and shutting the closet door. When I was sitting in my chair at my desk, I was in the hallway. And the hallway was only about 8 foot long. So it was a tight hallway. And it was a hallway that led outside because there was no other place for it to go. You were either in the church or out of the church. I mean, it was simple. Our first church, that old well, had been condemned 5 times. The first time it was condemned, now we went there in 1976, and the first time that old well church had been condemned was in 1952. Just to give you an idea, it was condemned in 1970, 1980, and it was condemned whenever we got there. They said we couldn't have church there, but we did. It would only seat 40 packed out. Well, it wouldn't seat but 35 whenever we got there. But we moved the door from the side to the back, and we picked up 5 new seats. Hallelujah. Hey, that's important when you can only seat 35. Oh, you want me to go on? Okay. She's... She wasn't looking, so don't tell her. There are a number of things that the fathers have prepared for us. They have dug a number of wells that has been left to us. So point three is one that God holds very dear, and that's the Sabbath. Our day of worship. Not necessarily a particular day, but it's the Lord's day. So one of the wells that have been left to us to take care of is the Lord's day. God knew what was good for man. And when at the very beginning he ordained one day out of 7 as a day of rest and worship, that has been lost in our modern day. Now, one day out of 7 for the Christian community is Sunday. It was made holy. It was made memorable because it was the day of resurrection. It was on the first day of the week that Jesus stepped out of the tomb. It was on the first day of the week that Mary and the other women went to the tomb to take care of the body and found it empty. It was the first day of the week that John and Peter ran from where they were all the way there. And it was the first day of the week that Jesus showed himself openly. This is the day that lets in the breath and out the music for God's glory and his praise. It gives a little opportunity for the Christian community to pull aside and be alone with God and to worship him from the depth of our being. It's a day designed so that God can be lifted up, that the world might see him as they see us in worship. It's a day when we turn to him and we call out upon his name and we present to him our praise, and he gives to us our strength and our faith. It's a day that we pull aside to check ourselves and to see what our soul is wearing. How is our soul dressed for eternity? Have we got on the new garments? And we need to regularly pull aside in a place of worship and praise on a day designed for such an event. and check the clothing upon our heart, our soul. George Herbert put it well when he said, without thy torch, the week is dark. The torch lights our way. An old author speaking of the journey of life, he described Sunday as an inn where the traveler can find rest while he collects his thoughts, both thoughts of the road that he has traveled and of the destination where he's going. Daniel Webster put it this way, you might as well try to put out the sun than to think to lighten the world with torches alone. Destroy the attraction of gravity and think to operate the universe by human power as to extinguish the moral light of the Sabbath and break the glorious driving force of the moral government of God. So you might as well try to put out the sun and light the world with torches than to put out the Sabbath and the moral government of God. Both as a public institution and as a personal spiritual institution, the Lord's Day, the Sabbath day, what we hold as the Sabbath day, needs to be redug, uncovered. There's so many things that have filled this well that it's almost not usable anymore. General Henry Gardia says in his analysis of the fall of France, he said, this is the one reason that the negation of every spiritual, every divine thing has been replaced with atheism. If not proclaimed, it was at least encouraged. And he also said that the main emphasis of that was the moral breakdown of France was because there was a disregard of century-old practices of observing Sunday as a day of worship. You try to replace it. You pull it out by the roots of our society, and our society will fall. And that's exactly what the world will try to do. All the attractions, all of the things that want to pull at our attention so that we'll miss church and go and do something else. We need to be very, very careful of that, because it will take the life out of America if we're not careful. As individuals, we would be smart to mark this day. I know it's difficult, but we need to mark this day, even as Robinson Crusoe did. He was on that lonely island. He put a post up in front of his little hut, and he made that post into a cross so that he would remember Christ. But on that cross, every day, he would cut a little slit to mark the day. But then on the Sunday, he would make that slit a little larger so that it encompassed more. He wanted to make sure that he knew today is the Lord's day. And on that day, he would go down to the beach and he would worship. Every day that notch was made, but on Sunday, it was made larger. So he marked time by his days of worship. So that brings us to point four. And I move to it. Another well needs redigging. And it's the well of the Christian home. So point four is Christian home, the Christian home. The old Roman homes, they were never complete and furnished until they had set up their household gods. Every Roman home had this niche. And there in that niche was the household gods. Two things that Abraham did. Every place he went, the first thing that he would do is build an altar, and then he would dig a well. So every place that Abraham did, first he would build an altar, and then he would dig a well. He dug the well for the protection of the physical life of his family. But he built an altar for the protection of the spiritual life of his family. Everybody in his tribe, everybody in his group, in his family, they knew that when Abraham would get to a place, if he pitched a tent, there would be an altar built. If he pitched a tent, there would be a well dug. It was necessary for life. The influence of a real Christian home on that family will be the life of that family. And if we don't have the Christian home, having the supply for the physical, that water flowing into that home, but having that spiritual life, that spiritual water flowing into the family, then the family has no strength and no lasting hope. Who can measure the incalculable value on America, on the church, on this world of true Christians' homes? Most valuable commodity on the face of this planet is that Christian home. It will change the tide of history one way or the other. The stronger the Christian home, the more history will flow in God's direction. The less influence of the Christian home, the further away and the more secular this world is going to be. The reach of those godly homes where daily prayers are offered at a family altar for the members of the household, for loved ones that are at a distance, for the community in which they dwell, for the government in which they serve, for the whole family of mankind, and for the soon coming kingdom of Christ. Who knows the worth of that prayer of that little four-year-old? Mumbled in a time of family gathering. How far does it reach around this world? That 10-year-old that says, and bless those that are in Africa. God reaches His hand at the very mention by one of these innocent children. I believe it. Nothing will move God's hand quicker than the faith of a child. And how are they going to know unless they see mom and daddy? One thing that our daughter saw, she saw her mom and dad on their knees. And she heard as we cried out to God. And she participated. We do not often hear good things from Hollywood. As a matter of fact, preachers like to beat up on Hollywood. But there was a time. That time is long since past. Most of you that are a little older, you'll know of Cecil B. DeMille's. He made some epics. One of them was the Ten Commandments. But he spoke of the profound influence that the family prayers had on his life in his boyhood home, and how he himself continued that custom even through the time when he was working in Hollywood as a director and creator of epic films. And he said this: if it were to be omitted, his children would miss it so much that they would demand to know the reason why. What great words from a man in his capacity. The world and the church and you and I need that time of prayer more than we need that time of eating around the table. And who can measure the influence of those prayers going up to God every day from thousands upon thousands of homes across our land? God's hand is on America because of the church and because of Christians that call upon His name. His protection is with us because people like you and me call on Him for His blessings. There's only one kind of home that can compete with time and grapple with eternity, and that's a Christian home. Children that come out of such a home, they have a peace. They have a made-up mind. They have a determination that few others have. I read a little story about a young man who went to work for a very well-to-do farmer. And after a few weeks, he went to the farmer and he gave up his position. As he was walking away, one of the other hands that was his friend ran over to him and said, "Why are you leaving such a good place? This is a great place to work. Was the work too hard? Was the hours too long?" He had nothing to complain about on that front. Were the wages too low or... He said, "No, the wages were generous." "Well, why? Why did you leave?" And that young man looked at him and said, "I left because this house has no roof." Now, to me and you today, that means very little. But it was very important, because the Scottish expression for a home without prayer to sanctify it was said, it has no roof. It means it has no prayer. It means it has little chance of long-term success. It means that there's no real peace, no real joy. It has no roof. Does your house have a roof? Is it a place of joy? Is it a place of peace? Is it a place of prayer? If it's not, then it has no power. And what kind of lasting influence does it have? Do you, on a regular basis, gather your children, young or old, just for prayer? And do you, mom and dad, pray over them and lay your hands on them? If you don't, you're missing one of the greatest opportunities and greatest blessings that you'll ever experience. Do you give them a chance and encourage them to call upon God in prayer for our nation, our leaders, for our church and its leaders? If not, you're missing a great opportunity to be a force, not only within our church community, but within our town's community. The Christian home has one of the greatest places of influence that God's ever put upon the face of this earth. Bow your heads with me, would you please? God, these wells are of great importance.